WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. You can spell words with that. It's 855-915-WMFO. Punch that in your phone. Be a part of the show. We always love to hear from you. Coming up later tonight, the Democrats making some excuses, blaming foreign powers on the upset in the 2016 election. And we're going to get to the bottom of how you were being manipulated and how this story is not at all what it seems and is just maybe not a complete waste of everybody's time, but certainly a waste of some perfectly good taxpayer dollars. Right?
That's what we like to do here. Spend taxpayer dollars on nothing.
855-915-9636 is the phone number. Also, what's hot, our favorite things from the past week, the strangest story of the past week, did you hear, all the great stuff that we do for the last time this year, Lisa Nichols. This is it.
We made it another year.
More of this.
And especially this year being probably, since I've been on the show in the past 4.5 years now, the most important and I think most significant year of news that we've covered. And, you know, we had the Summer of Blood and the election and everything that entails. And of course, if you have been listening to our show all year, you'll be very excited to hear our, well, every year we do a worst of. This year, we're turning the tables a little bit. We're going to do a best of 2016. You know, there might be some exaggeration on the best of, but yeah. It'll be a good show.
Our definition of best may be a little bit
a little skewed.
Loose.
Yeah,
so that's going to come up on the first Wednesday in January. Between now and then,
New Year.
We got a regular show tonight. Next week is the annual Christmas crossover. Here at WOW, my old show, meets Time Travel with Chris Earle. We will be broadcasting from 5 until 7 o'clock. And then again from 7 until 9 o'clock. We'll actually be broadcasting for 4 hours, from 5 until 9 o'clock. And lots of holiday fun and surprises. I think we have a real sausage party on tap this year.
Oh, really?
Because you're not going to be here.
I won't be.
And yeah.
I'll definitely be calling in. If I can try to stop in, I will.
It's going
to
be like Donald Trump's cabinet. It's going to be it's going to be an old white guy's Christmas here on WMFO.
I love it.
Tune in and flash back to what America was like in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much what you're getting out of this crowd.
One of the best highlights from that show is definitely the competition between you and, if you were just listening to the station, Time Travel with Chris Earle. You battle each other because your music knowledge and album list and song plethora, it's pretty strong. So you guys have quite the Christmas songs to
compensate for that, Chris cheats. Every year Chris cheats. He finds some new and exciting way to cheat in the contest. And
You know what? He's won, what, the past 3 years?
Yeah, because he cheats.
I don't know.
I mean, it's.
I think you just assume because I'm your co-host.
No.
I'm going to vote against you.
Do I need
Molly? Your wife does come on, and maybe she votes against you. But I love how you say that she's going to get one gift removed from the list.
Yes.
For every song that she does not vote for you.
You remember a couple of years ago, he played the clip of me screaming at you, screaming at PJ on the air.
The clip that still haunts me to this day.
Just to win around. Which has nothing to do with the holidays. Yeah.
There's one rule in radio, and it is not to be late.
Yeah.
I learned that the hard way.
One rule in radio, show up on time.
Yep.
Show up on time.
I think I referred to you.
Didn't I refer to you as the other one?
Yes. I didn't have a name.
I'll talk. I think that's when you were listening in the car,
and
I
was
like, "Yeah, I'll talk to the other one when she gets here," which really nobody wants to hear.
Yeah. Imagine driving 2.5 hours in traffic, just stuck, not being able to go anywhere, listening to you, which sounded like angry dad on the air.
I was
slightly frightened.
Yeah.
I think I sat outside the studio for maybe like 10 minutes just because you wanted to prove a point of me being late.
So it'll be nonstop holiday mirth and merriment.
And you have your red on. You're so festive.
I got my Ken Bone sweater. This is the Ken Bone sweater.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wearing that tonight.
Your Halloween costume.
And then the week after that, so 2 weeks from tonight, we'll throw together some kind of a holiday music special just to get you unwound from Christmas. I was planning to do something the day after Christmas or the day before Christmas or maybe a couple days before Christmas. Then I lost all my vacation time. So I got to work Christmas week, which stinks. So I can't come in. So I'll do something that night. So we'll be back, Lisa and I.
In the new year.
In the new year with the worst of. But until then, we still have one more week of this nonsense to get through. What do you got?
Well, today in local news, we learned Boston advocacy groups say no to online monitoring. Several civil rights groups and advocacy organizations are asking Boston officials to cease plans on spending $1.4 million on software that will allow police to monitor people's social media activity. In a letter addressed to Mayor Marty Walsh and Police Commissioner Bill Evans, the ACLU of Massachusetts and 20 other civil rights advocacy groups, community organization, and religious groups expressed concern that the surveillance technology would violate privacy rights and be used to target certain individuals. Quote, spending scarce taxpayer dollars on surveillance of online speech and associations frustrates the Boston Police Department's mission of community-oriented policing, threatens our civil rights and liberty, and undermines public safety. We are concerned that social media surveillance software will be unfairly focused on people of color, Muslims, and dissidents, if not today, but under future mayors and different police commissioners, end quote, the letter read. Many of these issues were raised last week at a city council hearing on the matter. Boston police said they'll focus on criminal activity and threats made online, and the technology will help them do that more efficiently. At the hearing, police did not offer many details on how the social media surveillance program would work and said the department hasn't yet selected a vendor for the program. So, Boston PD wants to watch what you're doing on your Twitter and your Instagram. And, you know, if you're showing pictures of the gun, hashtag blessed, hashtag crazy gun lady, they might be monitoring you.
The monitoring is meant to be used during periods of civil unrest to identify people who are taking place in civil unrest.
Yes.
People now, who actually, are organizing and planning. And, you know, it's funny because you don't really hear a lot of complaints coming from the left generally about government surveillance. Mm-hmm. They kind of turned a blind eye to all the Edward Snowden stuff, as I recall. But boy, the local police want to know who's protesting. Suddenly we're upset about this.
Of course.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, there should be none of this surveillance at all.
Absolutely.
That has been my position consistently with regard to every level of government. However, if you're going to go on Twitter, and you're going to get on Twitter and you're going to be like, I'm rioting at the corner of Berkeley Street, come join me right now. I think the Boston police should be able to see that. It is a public tweet, and they should be able to, I mean, there's listening software out there that will basically let you zone in on certain keywords.
No, absolutely. And I actually had brought this up during, I believe it's one of our segments, maybe a few months ago, and how there was a small company out of Chicago, and they had released the names of the different departments across the country that they were working with that were utilizing their software, mostly in the times of rioting around Baltimore protests, Ferguson, and being able to zone in on people that were trying to tear up the city. Now, the point that you make, Derek, absolutely, I agree with, that Boston PD should know when there are different riots taking place, whether you're in JP or Roslindale or whatever corner of the city. It gets to a point, though, once we start surveillance of online social media, what's too far? We start at just trying to find out where, you know, the rioting is going on and trying to keep political, you know, social rest,
sure.
But how far does it go?
Well, anything that you post publicly is fair game. So if you're going to be dumb enough to post this stuff publicly and say,
I mean,
hey,
essentially what this is surveillance.
Hey, everybody.
And it's the same thing that you talk about that, yeah, sure, if you want to look at my text messages, I have nothing to hide. Same thing with my social media. Yes, absolutely. Go in and read every single one of my Instagram posts or my Facebook posts. I have nothing to hide. But then you get to a point, and I do believe this, under future mayors, under future police commissioners, are we going to decide that, oh, we don't like what is going on there? Should we now start targeting these people for doing that? I don't believe that they're basically going to be only looking at handles that have some sort of Muslim name in it or something.
But that's the difference between social listening and surveillance. Mm-hmm. I draw the line when it comes to surveillance. You can't see my direct messages. You can't follow everything that I tweet because you think I might be a bad person.
Yes.
Okay. That is government overstepping its bounds. If a situation is taking place and you have a software tool that will let you see all of the tweets that are coming out publicly relating to that event, or all the Facebook posts that are coming out publicly or in groups relating to that event, or people are posting videos on YouTube, then by all means, law enforcement should have those tools and should be able to use those tools,
again,
because that is protecting public safety.
Absolutely, and that I can agree with. But when you're talking about social media, for the most part, I'm going to say about 75% of people use location. So when you are tagged or you upload something, it is going to show your exact location.
Good.
There's a new feature on the iPhone that you take a picture and it pulls up the address of where you took the picture.
That will make it easier for the police to identify and arrest the malfeasors.
But now if you have a situation where you have some sort of criminal act being done, at what are they going to take a radius of, you know, the mile around it and see everybody that was in that area via social media and then start targeting?
Yes, and they're well within their rights to do that.
Isn't that going a little above and beyond? Because exactly what you just said, there's a difference between surveillance and, you know, listening.
What do you think happened after the Boston Marathon bombing? They got videos and solicited photographs from everybody.
We are talking about
in a 5-block radius.
That is a very, very different situation from everyday criminal activity. Talking about one of the biggest attacks that happened here in the United States.
But this is the kind of situation where it would be used.
But again, we're
talking about things like the Baltimore riots.
But you can honestly tell me that it is only going to stay to these big events that happen, that it isn't going to trickle down into these smaller offenses.
The police already have the right to triangulate your location using cell phone towers right now.
No, of course, but they need a warrant and a subpoena for it, for
sure,
the information.
And they would under this as well.
No, but under surveillance, they can do it without...
As I said, I don't support surveillance. But if you're stupid enough to post things on social media while an event is taking place, the police have every right to know who you are, where you are, and what you're doing. And if you are committing an illegal act and you're stupid enough to post it on social media, go to jail.
But I'm saying if you were not committing a criminal act, that you were just happened to be in the area, why should you have to be questioned over that because of some small petty crime? Because again, I'm not saying...
Rioting is not a petty crime, first of all.
What I can understand that happens here in Boston, especially Boston PD and their great big ideas of what they come out with, this isn't going to stop at just targeting where the riots are happening.
And can we go back to your suggestion that rioting is a petty crime? Because
and I'm not comparing that.
Okay. No one is talking about using this for carjackers or using this for purse snatchers or any of that kind of stuff. They're talking about using it during large-scale civil unrest events.
But again, this is what they're saying. We have very limited information of what we're getting.
Do you know how impractical it would be? And normally I buy... No, look.
If you're going to say it's impractical to spend $1.4 million on software just to find out what Joe Schmo's doing on the side of the street, yeah, actually, Boston Police Department probably would spend that money on it.
Normally, I buy into and indeed even enable your Orwellian conspiracy theories about the police state. But in this case, that's not what the tool does. I know what these tools are.
I understand that.
I've worked with some of these tools. The capability to just surveil somebody without a warrant does not exist with these tools. It's not there. So
even in our surveillance state, you're telling me that it can't be used for
you
that.
You might as well.
And don't write it off like I'm completely on the other side in Orwellian,
You pretty much are, because unless you know what you're looking for, you can't find anybody. And you can't just sit there and be like,
"No." And again,
hey, what's Joe Smith doing today?
But don't paint it as I don't agree with what this tool is mainly built for. My problem is when people take it and use it for something else.
You can't use it for something else. That's one of the things about it. It is pretty.
I can't sign on to that.
You would get better results with the video cameras they have installed all over the city
for
of
the
Boston.
Basic fundamentals,
which, by the way, nobody has a problem with. Nobody has a problem with the video cameras all over town, which are an actual surveillance tool.
Mm-hmm.
We got about as many video cameras in Boston as they have in London.
Of course, you look on every single street corner. They have them.
Every corner in the city of Boston is covered.
You question what you're doing. Are they capturing you jaywalking? Are they flagging you? Are you going to have a cop behind you in 10 minutes because, you didn't cross in a crosswalk?
No, because nobody has the resources to prosecute all of that. But in the event that a major crime is committed, they can go back and look at the video and say, this is our guy. This is what he was driving. This is where he went. In some cases, they can catch criminals in the act by following them with the video cameras. So that is a level of surveillance that we all live with.
Mm-hmm.
The tools that the BPD are talking about can only be used if people are posting things publicly.
No, and absolutely. There's so many times where I say to you, how stupid can you be? I mean, regardless, at midnight, marijuana is legalized here in Massachusetts. Everybody, hooray. But
is everybody
when
going
I'm
out?
Seeing people posting, whether it be on Instagram or on Facebook, showing them smoking a blunt just every day.
Is there a thing happening on the Common tonight where we can all go enjoy our legal weed? Because I haven't heard about anything, and frankly, that surprises me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're correct. As of midnight, you can possess an ounce of marijuana anywhere you like
in
the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
And you can start growing 15 plants.
12.
Is it 12?
12. I thought it was 6.
It did go up, and I think there's still so many gray areas.
When I read the legislation, I was like, 6, that's reasonable. And then I heard 12, and I'm like, how do we get to 12?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you can have 12 plants.
Means electricity bills are going
to
go up.
It takes 3.5 months after you plant the seeds to get anything. So it's going to be a while. But midnight, you can go out and smoke weed, and the cops can't do anything about it. Not a bad deal.
Mm.
I'm on board. in national news, if I can ever actually get this thing open, you gotta give me a second here. It's coming, I promise. National news.
It's the end of the year.
Dude, we're already
glitches.
Like, we're not even into the final shows of the year, and I'm already like completely off my game and losing my mind.
I think this year did age us a little bit.
Aged me a lot, I'll tell you that much. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services today made it harder for states to block funding for Planned Parenthood. In a rule clarification under Title 10, Health and Human Services said that participation in government funding can only be blocked if an entity fails to provide services. The clarification was issued in response to attempts by several states to block funding for Planned Parenthood on the grounds that it provided abortions in addition to valuable health services, such as cancer screenings and contraception. Title 10 funding is available to nearly 4,000 community-based clinics around the United States, including Planned Parenthood. So this is the final last-ditch effort to protect Planned Parenthood from the coming Republican onslaught.
Yeah. Now, I mean, still the rule could be overturned in 2017. You know, when President-elect Donald Trump does take office, federal lawmakers are allowed to roll back the regulations under Congressional Review Act, or they could go through the formal rulemaking process to reverse the actions of today. I mean, Planned Parenthood, they get, just some facts, $500 million a year from federal government. About 75% of that comes from Medicaid, from medical care with patients with low incomes. So this new Health and Human Services rule reinforces federal law that says, you know, the agency cannot discriminate against qualified organizations in granting federal funds. So it's pretty much a protection for Planned Parenthood.
Now, we are a pro-choice radio show. We are both pro-choice. You're a crazy gun lady, but I think you're a pro-choice crazy gun lady. The feeling here is that it is better to give people the right to choose and then choose to do something else than it is to tell them, no, that you can't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that a smart, modern society would function. Planned Parenthood is forbidden under Title 10 from using any of the money that it gets from the government to provide abortions. Because the government is all too aware that American taxpayers don't like the idea, some American taxpayers at least, don't like the idea that my tax dollars are going to fund somebody's abortion.
Yes.
We get that, okay? people don't want to get one. Nobody's saying you have to. You don't want to pay for them. That's fine. This is sort of an interesting area in the way that the government operates. And in general, I agree with it. The problem that I have is the incredible amount of pro-choice advocacy that comes out of Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood would sit back and have you believe, we're just a health provider.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not. You are one of the most active sponsors and promoters of abortion in the United States. You have lobbyists, you have national campaigns, you have a whole website devoted to this, and that advocacy role becomes troubling. Because most health providers are not involved in advocacy at that level.
Mm-hmm.
You don't walk into Mass General and they're like, hey, you know, help us keep abortion legal.
Mm-hmm.
You don't walk into Boston Medical Center and they're like, hey, help us end AIDS. There are doctors who are working on those things, but it is not a position of the organization.
There's not commercials, there's not print campaigns, yes.
And I would really like to see Planned Parenthood get out of the advocacy business. I really would.
But that's always been the correlation between the two. Everybody understands. And I think it was always on display, but especially after the Planned Parenthood, whether they were real or fake, videos did come out. I think it was accelerated into that and them trying to position themselves as, well, women need a right to choose. And again, we see it with election after election. And with a woman who was running a campaign, that was something big that everybody was talking about.
And this is the thing. I don't think the fact that they provide abortions is a problem because they can segment that off. I think the advocacy role is a problem. And while I'm not about to step on anybody's right to freedom of speech, what you do on a personal level and what you choose to embrace at an organizational level
mm-hmm.
are two different things. And for Planned Parenthood to take this advocacy position that it has, granted, we can sit here and say that no federal funding is going to that advocacy, but at the same time, that federal funding is going to other things that enable them to have funding for the advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not direct in the same way that we didn't give $1 billion to Iran to get our people back.
No, and I agree with what you were saying, but I feel like because abortion is such a hot button issue, because they are the place that most people do go to, if we're looking at percentage wise, that they feel, I mean, and I'm just positioning myself as if I was a part of Planned Parenthood organization. They're saying that they are the leader in getting the correct information. But what it does come off as, it's not information. It's coming off as preaching.
Well, it's lobbying.
Coming off,
it's advocacy
exactly,
is exactly what it is.
And when you have government involved in such an issue, because it's not like, and you bring up the example of Mass General promoting AIDS prevention or any other major disease that's out there. There isn't somebody to promote abortion.
Right.
You never promote abortion. Just understanding the fundamentals of what's involved in it. Planned Parenthood has always been the provider of that.
I suppose the most accurate comparison I could make would be if you walked into Mass General and they had an entire organization devoted to making euthanasia legal.
Mm-hmm.
And you walked in and you go to their website and they're like, make euthanasia legal. Help us help people die. Because that's another controversial area. And there are certainly doctors who support euthanasia. And there are doctors who oppose it. But we don't expect that a hospital is going to take...
But that's a difference between an opinion and, you know, an organization's message that they're sending out.
Well, it's one thing to provide medicine. It's another thing to try and change public policy.
Yes.
And again, I fully support Planned Parenthood's right to say whatever they want, run their organization any way that they want. I think you would be less of a target for the kind of actions that Republicans have taken against Planned Parenthood if you were not an advocacy organization. If you take the advocacy out of it, you make it much, much harder for state governments, local governments, federal governments to come in and say, what are you guys doing here?
But unfortunately, I don't think you're ever going to get to a point where you can separate Planned Parenthood and that advocacy aspect of it.
There tends to be a shortage of logic on the left, and that's part of the reason why this continues to go on. Mm-hmm. It should be a completely separate organization. You know, go fund it. Donate to it if you want to. Don't put it under your name, because you're just drawing a great big target on yourself at a time when you probably do not want to be drawing a great big target on yourself. Republicans are in control of both houses of Congress and the White House. A gentle reminder. In world news, Aleppo slid back into chaos today, just one day after a ceasefire promised to give rebels a chance to escape the besieged city. Coalition partner Iran refused to honor the ceasefire, which Russia had brokered with Syria, Iran, and Turkey, that would have allowed the rebels to leave the city unless there was a simultaneous evacuation of wounded from two nearby rebel-held cities. Buses that had been sent to evacuate rebels and their families returned to their depots, airstrikes resumed, and rebel shells were fired, killing at least six people. Late Wednesday, rebel groups said they would resume the ceasefire, offering hope for evacuation of those still trapped in the fallen eastern part of Aleppo, which has been a war zone for the past 4 years. UN observers have described the situation on the ground as, quote, a humanitarian meltdown, end quote, citing unconfirmed reports of summary executions of families by forces fighting to restore control of the city to the government of Bashar al-Assad.
And again, I continue to say, I don't even know how many times this year that Aleppo is a complete mess. And, you know, world leaders have tried, and they continue to try, especially here in the United States, failing badly to end this war. And that's been going on in Syria for so many years. So now, instead, Assad has taken back Aleppo, and you have a situation where, yeah, it's the end of a battle, you could say, but it's not the end of the war, and it is one up for Assad.
Well,
and that is not good.
It is ending the way that so many other wars have ended, with the conquerors coming in and slaughtering everybody. We've seen this time and time again throughout human history. There is no reason to expect that this time is going to be any different. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it good. It is inevitable. And the stories coming out of Syria and Aleppo are horrifying, but they are also completely and utterly predictable if you are going to have a city that is held by rebels. Once the government forces get in, they're taking everybody out. Mm-hmm. This is a cleanse operation. This is not a resettlement operation. This isn't about taking land. This is about driving the rebels out.
No, and again, as you said, I mean, we're 4 years of this brutal civil war. I mean, how many hundreds of thousands of civilians have been killed?
Three.
Yeah.
Around 300,000.
And you also have a situation where millions have fled their homes, fled their families, have gone to Europe, and it's basically led to the worst refugee crisis that this continent has ever seen since World War II. It's unbelievable what's happened. I mean, this has been ground zero ever since rebel groups took over control. Assad forces, they've been gaining ground for months, and this is the outcome. So many times as I pose to you the question of what happens next, what is the next move you think from Assad's camp?
Well, once you're
just maintaining Aleppo and
no, I mean, once you've got control of Aleppo, now you can go in and start getting rid of the rebels in other parts of Syria. Mm-hmm. Aleppo is going to be the most difficult place to take
because it's biggest city.
It's urban. It's a big city. It's an ancient city. Lots of places to run and hide. And ultimately, this ended for the same reason that every other siege ends. Either you starve the people out and they die, or you gain a foothold and you start slaughtering people and they surrender. Mm-hmm. That's how you end a siege. There is no other way to end a siege that has ever been useful in human history. So everybody, it's funny to me to sit here and watch everybody freaking out about this online, because what did you expect? What did you think the outcome was going to be here? If you know history...
But this has also been going on for years.
Sure. But if you know history, you know that this is the only possible outcome. Okay? The government forces are going to come in. They're going to murder a lot of people. They're going to keep murdering people until the rebels surrender. That's how you win the war. That's war. War sucks.
Now, for so long, the United States has not done anything. You see a little more pressure coming from Russia.
Oh, we armed the people that the Russians are killing right now. We did that.
Mm-hmm. But we've really taken a back seat to this. And I believe it was in the beginning of the year when this was really coming to a head, and you had said people should be ashamed as Americans to go online, because that's our way of getting information, or whether you're watching mainstream media, which really, for the most part, other than this, Assad regaining Aleppo, isn't touching this, isn't reporting on this.
No.
But if you search for it in the right places, you can see. I mean, children are dying on the coast. It's unbelievable to watch. This is like a humanitarian crisis, and the United States is not doing anything.
CNN hasn't even had this on their homepage for hours at a time over the last couple of days, mm-hmm. because they're too busy talking about Donald Trump's cabinet picks or whatever new thing they've dug up on Donald Trump. No attention given to this at all. This is a conflict that was supported by the United States of America. Let's not forget that. We armed the rebels. We gave them guns. We gave them food. We gave them money. And now we have stood back and let mm-hmm. them be slaughtered. Because it is more politically expedient for us to do that than it is to try and pick a fight with Russia, Iran, Turkey, and Syria.
No, absolutely. I mean, we have a major play in this. And the fact that when the whole migrant crisis was going on in the EU, we said that in a situation where the United States goes into a country, create such chaos that the United States should be the ones to take on yep. millions of civilians coming in from the country. Unfortunately, we're in a situation where we can't, because ISIS has infiltrated the movement into the migrant crisis.
Well, so they can't get over here anyway.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting on a boat to America when you can go to Italy.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But with all of these things that are swirling around Bashar al-Assad, and with him, whether it be with chemical weapons, and is he going to be using this more? I mean, are we going to be seeing more of this from him? Because essentially what it seems, he's put up his hands, I don't care, I'm just going to kill anybody that gets in my way of doing it. But because there is such a focus on this, but nobody's actually doing anything about it, do you think he's going to pull back a little bit?
No, not at all.
Not pull back, I'm saying pull back on innocent civilians.
He's going to do the same thing Erdogan does, which is what everybody in that part of the world does, which is slaughter your enemies. Mm-hmm. Okay? As soon as...
But can you say your own civilians are your enemies?
Yes. If they're taking up arms against you, yes. If they're supporting people who've taken up arms against you, yes.
But how do all the world powers sit back and watch that and say, you are killing your own civilians? You, in your warped sense of reality, believe that are their rebels and they're against you.
Because we need their oil. And we need their political support. That's why we do it. That's United States foreign policy, and has been United States foreign policy in the Middle East for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they hate us, in case you're wondering. Whenever anyone sits around and says...
So we just intervene and get in when it's convenient for us.
Whenever anyone sits around and says, why do they hate us? I ask them if they know nothing about U.S. history
mm-hmm.
and U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. The reasons why they hate us are obvious.
Of course.
But they're also kind of busy hating each other over there. So once Assad gets Aleppo back under his control, which should be in another day or so, the next step is going to be Iran's going to go in and slaughter all the rebels that are hanging out outside of Aleppo in the villages.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey's going to go down to Palmyra and slaughter all the ISIS kids who showed up and took that over again because no one's paying attention. Then Turkey's going to wander over and kill all the Kurds. And the cycle goes on.
So we sit here.
Yeah. And thank God that we don't live in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, in the back of your mind, you have to be asking yourself how long this situation can persist. How long you can have an entire section of the world at war before it starts spilling over into other places,
mm-hmm.
including places that you might call home. We've already had the terrorist attacks over here. And we've seen terrorist attacks all over the world.
Of course.
That's the tip of the iceberg of where this thing could go.
No, absolutely. We're already seeing it spill over into the EU.
Yeah. So
it's not too far away.
Go over to Europe and ask them what the consequences of this war, the Arab Spring, sponsored by Barack Obama. The European Union is falling apart because of America's involvement in the Middle East, because of the migrant crisis that grew out of the Arab Spring.
Caused by us.
Yes. If there is one small bit of solace to be taken in all of this, it is that should Donald Trump's cabinet be approved, we're going to be a lot more certain about where and when and how we use our military.
No, and I tell our listeners to look up, and we do bring it up once in a while, the Arab Spring and what it is, and the cause and effect of our role in that, and look what it has brought us.
We succeeded in destabilizing Turkey, Egypt, and creating a 5-year civil war in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
That's all courtesy of the involvement of the United States. We did those things. And we, interestingly, are the only ones that have not paid a real price for it.
But no, Derek. We're trying to create peace. Peace in the Middle East. That's what we're trying to do.
There is less peace in the Middle East today, far less peace in the Middle East today, than there was when Barack Obama entered the White House. That is a measurable fact. There are also a lot fewer people in the Middle East today than there were when Barack Obama entered the White House, because a couple million of them are now in Europe. WMFO Medford.
Well, today in sports, we discovered the identity of the WikiLeaks. It's Wakey, not Wiki. A radio announcer for Wake Forest football games provided or attempted to provide details about the Demon Deacons' upcoming game plays to opponents during the past 3 seasons, according to a findings of an internal investigation conducted by the university. The investigation ensued following Wake Forest's 44-12 loss to Louisville on November 12th, when staff members discovered materials left behind by the Louisville indicated that the Cardinals were prepared for plays by the Demon Deacons had not run before. The university's release placed blame on Tommy Elroyd, a former Wake Forest player, graduate assistant, and full-time assistant coach who was fired along with the entire coaching staff following the 2013 season. Quote, based on emails, text message, and phone records, Elroyd provided and attempted to provide confidential and proprietary game preparation on multiple occasions, end quote, beginning in 2014 when Elroyd was hired as an analyst on the Wake Forest IMG radio network. Elroyd has been fired by the radio network and has been banned from Wake Forest athletic department and facilities. Now, this story is just a follow-up to 2 weeks ago when I reported on, and you said this is just football, as always. And, you know, the story is so crazy, and I believe it can only happen in college football.
Yeah. So it's a revenge story.
Which, yes, tends to, and that's why I report on it, because, you know, so many questions are like, oh, they just, and I think you said, you know, Susie snuck into the locker room and gave it to Billy, and they kissed, and yeah, now they got the plays. This is interesting, because now we're leaning on ridiculous, and you have a home team.
Well, it's college football.
Radio
it's
announcer,
ridiculous to begin with.
You know, a coach that's fired and then replaced by current staff, and now he's leaking information to get back and revenge on the football team.
Wow.
Very, very interesting. So we're not talking about, and that was one of my questions that I posed to you, is saying, how long has this been going on? Apparently, it's been going on for the past 3 seasons that he's been a radio announcer. Since getting fired in 2013, he schemed up this plan and saying, well, now that I have access, because if you know anything about Wake Forest, they, over the past season, or 2015, they became very, very secretive of who they're letting in. So it's pretty much only visiting coaches, authorized visitors, and coaching staff. This guy happened to be on the list, you know, former player, alumni, of course he's on it. Yeah, he's recording all of it and sending all the information. I want to know what the kickback was. Is it just out of pure...
I think it's just spite, and I applaud his industry and his commitment to his cause. This is an American hero.
Yeah.
This, more of us should be like this guy.
Mm-hmm. Because I picture
this guy
that scene from Billy Madison, when the kid that got picked on so many times in high school has a list, and he's just checking them off one by one.
This guy followed through for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
3 years.
And if he didn't get caught, how long would it have lasted?
Man, after wrecking a college team's football season for a year, most of us would be satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Most, not this guy. This guy is like
so angry. Mm. It's not like a head coach, just an assistant coach. Yeah, it's, you know, we hear, God, you know, week after week scandals that happen, especially in the NCAA, whether it be in basketball, football, all of this stuff happens. Unfortunately, you know, many people look to the NCAA as their big NFL-like team because they don't have the
right.
A lot of people Midwest, they don't have a team. I mean, go down in Texas and understand the importance of football, and basically they shut down towns and cities on Friday night for Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
So it's just another thing to add to college sports that it's not exactly what it seems to be. There's a lot of interworkings, and I'm sure this guy is not the only one that has done this.
No.
To the length of it, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I say, I mean, this is one committed individual. You know, he's going to ruin Wake Forest forever. Again, I applaud his industry and commitment to his cause. That's exceptional. You don't see that level of dedication much in America anymore. But this kind of thing goes on all the time. Stealing playbooks, stealing plays, like cheating. Anybody who thinks there's no cheating in football is out of their mind. There's cheating in every professional sport. Everybody's trying to get away with something.
Some competitive advantage.
All the time.
Absolutely.
Look at the veteran players. You know, whenever you see pass coverage in a slow motion replay in an NFL game, keep an eye on the way that the veteran players will disguise the ways that they tug on guys and slow guys down and push guys off their routes and check guys and do things to stop them from catching the pass.
Of course.
The difference between, you know, a veteran NFL defender, a guy like Darrelle Revis, and a rookie NFL defender is that Darrelle Revis has figured out how to do all that stuff without getting flagged.
Yes. And I believe
those are the guys who are the best.
Anybody that's ever played sports or anybody that's even watched sports, you understand that players are going to do that. They're going to get that competitive advantage, that they're going to be maybe a little bit quicker or first to the ball to get it or put a stop to them.
They're not all a bunch of gentlemen standing around saying, I would never think of infracting the rules. No.
And once in a while it gets caught. But especially with the importance of NFL, NCAA football, there's going to be money that is given to the players that are stars from alumni. And in this case, you get your play stolen.
I'll tell you one thing about the NFL. Either they're going to make it illegal for the backfield to go in motion on field goals, or every NFL team is going to be looking for high jumpers next season who can get over that offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Because that blocked field goal of the Patriots game on Monday night was not the first time we've seen that this season. There are a number of teams that have pulled off that exact play. And all you need is a guy who can jump high enough not to touch anybody.
Hmm. See, you should be a coach. Well, in food news, we learned food isn't the only thing that your food processor may cut up. Before using your food processor for holiday treats in the next few weeks, you might want to make sure the blades haven't been recalled for dozens of mouth lacerations.
Ouch.
Cuisinart's parent company, Conair, is voluntarily recalling about 8 million units after 69 consumers reported broken pieces of blades in their food. It includes 30 cases that cause mouth lacerations or tooth injuries, according to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The issue is with the product's riveted blade, which, quote, can break over time, and small pieces of the blade can break off into processed food, end quote, says the CPSC ads. The blade has four rivets positioned around a beige center cap. If you have a Cuisinart food processor, you should check the model number at the bottom of the unit. The infected food processors begin with the following numbers: CFP 911, DFP 71114, DLC 5710, XP, DLC 2007, 2011, 2014, 3011 and 3014, EV7 and 1014, KFP7 and MP14. The units were sold from July 1996 through December 2013, according to the company. Customers can get a free blade for replacement.
Yeah, basically,
that's a really, really big recall. We're talking about, again, 8 million units.
Going back to 1996. So if you've bought a Cuisinart in the last 20 years,
any of the way, and you can check out on their website, pretty much every major site has been reporting about this. This is the biggest story in food news right now. So you can find the numbers, check at the bottom. Again, the model number is on the bottom of the unit. So they give you a list of them. I would get that replaced.
By the way, I didn't know that Conair was making the Cuisinart.
I didn't either.
I think Conair bought the Cuisinart because they're the hairdryer people, and it's like, you make the Cuisinart too? But basically, go and look at your Cuisinart. If it has the riveted blades, stop using that thing immediately.
Well, especially when we're talking about food processors, generally you're not processing soft things. Yes, you use it for sauces, whether you're making, you know, a pesto or whatnot. But a lot of times you're using it to crush nuts and sharp objects that are actually going to cause those blades more likely to crack or snap, as they said, in your, you know, crushed up nuts. You don't want to find...
I think you got a lot of people walking around thinking they got ninjas, and they're like chucking the cell phones in there and all kinds of stuff, and they're like, will it blend? And of course, the blade shatters. But this is a serious deal. Like, do not mess around with this. If you own a Cuisinart, go look. The easiest way to tell if you've got one of the affected ones is go look at it. If the blades are riveted on, that's the bad one. And all you got to do is contact the Conair people. They will send you a new blade. But for God's sake, don't use the thing. Mm-hmm. The last thing you want to do is have someone run to the emergency room over the holidays because they got their mouth sliced open by a piece of blade in your Christmas cookies.
Not in good taste.
Not a happy holiday memory for anybody. In technology news, the federal government is demanding talking cars. Talking cars, Lisa. Mm. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration announced that it will make vehicle-to-vehicle communication a requirement for all new cars in 5 years. The technology uses shortwave radio to allow cars to sense the direction, speed, and braking of other vehicles in a 300-meter radius and is seen as a step toward allowing driverless cars to share the road with human-driven vehicles. The rule is also a step toward the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's goal of eliminating driving fatalities within the next 30 years.
So what they're saying is, if I am driving behind you, I can talk to you through your car?
Well, it's not. You have nothing at all to do with this.
Okay, you're so not your cars are talking to each other.
You're not even involved in the conversation. The cars are talking to each other. Yep, and it's a shortwave setup that basically says, car here, car here, car here, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. And works with a lot of the safety systems that we see built into cars now. Things like...
So in a situation where you slam on your brakes, your car is sending a signal to my car that even though that I'm not braking, it is going to come to a complete
correct.
Stop. Correct. Or decrease acceleration.
There are a lot of cars on the market right now that have automatic braking systems. Where if the car in front of you stops, even if you've probably seen the commercial, even if you're not paying attention, your car is going to stop. Mm-hmm. It's because your car is aware of what
it's
that other car has done.
It's sending signals to it.
Yes.
It's like a sonar.
In some cases, it's a sonar that does that. In some cases, it's a wireless. But what they want is every car to have a consistent system so that they can all talk to each other and understand like what they're doing and where they're likely to go. Hmm. That's not going to help. You know, the situation that I imagine is like that idiot in Boston who's driving down the center lane of Commonwealth Avenue with his right turn signal on and then goes over to the left lane and back to the center lane and then back over to the... Never goes right. Mm-hmm. That is going to confuse the cars.
Or somebody that's driving on the highway with their left signal on the whole entire time for about 15 miles.
Yeah.
Just turn it off.
That is going to confuse the cars. Mm-hmm. And the cars will be like, we don't know what he's doing either.
I read there was this news study talking about how self-driving cars are going to be bullied by other drivers.
You better believe it. You better believe
actually it. Actually using it, so it's going to be, speeding up. And it was a really interesting article.
Have you ever seen, you've never driven with me, so you don't know how I treat Prius drivers on the road.
I know. In the many years that I've known... No, I have driven with you back from the football game.
The first thing that happens if...
It's passed out in the back.
The first thing that happens if I see a Prius is two words leave my mouth. The first I can't say on the air, but it rhymes with trucking, and the other one is Prius. That's the first thing every time I wind up in back of one of these things.
Yeah.
I then immediately start looking for a way to get in front of it because they are inevitably the slowest, most useless vehicles on the road. And I have, I'm sure nice people own them. I'm sure well-meaning people own them, but you shouldn't be allowed on the same road with the rest of us because you are driving something with the torque equivalent of a golf cart on roads built for people going much faster.
Mm-hmm. So your car could communicate with the Prius and say, bleeping, it, get out of my way.
If this came out and this was an option, I would want something that would automatically force every Prius in front of me off to the side of the road.
It would just debilitate all motor functions.
Yes. And by the way, driverless cars, forget it. It's like, if I see one of those coming near me, you better believe I'm forcing that thing off the road because I don't want the AI deciding that it's going to back up or take a left turn in front of me or do something else stupid. All right? I trust the robots even less than I trust my fellow drivers. And I'm in Boston. We have the worst drivers in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather
we're up there.
I would rather take my chances downtown in the theater district after the bars let out with Boston drivers than I would with some driverless AI vehicle. No.
No thanks.
No. No, 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 no. Technology is great. That technology we don't particularly need.
Yeah.
What I'm saying.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
The calendar still says autumn, but no one told the weather. Lisa Nichols, winter is here. Early. We got winter early this year. You love that.
I don't like the cold.
Okay. Well, you're not going to like the next couple of days then. Tonight, not so bad. We're going down to the mid-20s. Enjoy. Partly cloudy skies. Tomorrow isn't going to get any warmer. It's just going to be, you know, the same temperature that it is right now. That's our high for tomorrow. Temperature is not, it's just going to stay the same. It's not going to go up at all. It's going to be partly cloudy. Tomorrow night's low, 6. 6. That's tomorrow night's. That's tomorrow night's low temperature. 6.
I thought we said and discussed anything under 30 was banned from the show. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to know.
6. That's tomorrow night's low. 6. Oh, and on top of that, you're going to get a west-northwesterly wind at 24 miles an hour.
Well, good.
Which is going to make it feel like 20 below.
Perfect.
So enjoy that. 6. That's your low tomorrow night. 6. Friday, highs in the teens.
High.
In the teens on Friday. Under sunny skies. Unlimited sunshine. 18 mile an hour winds. Lows on Friday night in the mid-teens. So not quite as bad as 6. And then Saturday, we get things back a little bit to normal. We're going to get some snow early in the day that is going to change to rain from south to north. Highs on Saturday in the low 40s. Lows are only going to fall back to about 40 degrees on Saturday night. No need to worry about things icing up. It won't happen. And then on Sunday, we're actually going to get into the low 50s as the rain moves out. Then after that, the deep freeze returns. Lows in the 20s, the low 20s Sunday night.
So kids, if you plan on starting the growth of your marijuana plants that are, again, legal at midnight, 6.
Yep. Let me just remind you, the low temperature, no, that's tomorrow night. It's Thursday night into Friday. The low temperature, 6.
Perfect.
6.
Good.
Did you hear all the other stories that caught our attention when we come back here on WMFO Medford?
Have you ever noticed a number and a shield along with a quality grade mark on the meat you buy? Well, that's the yield grade. Although the yield grade is important to the retailer, you don't need to be concerned about it unless you're buying a large cut of meat like an untrimmed wholesale cut. The yield grade tells you how much usable meat you will have after the waste is removed. A yield grade 1 has the most usable meat and a yield grade 5 the least. To learn more, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, 20250.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
And have you answered your Christmas seal letter? Hello, this is Bill Cosby, and if your Christmas seal letter is still stashed away in the corner someplace, it's about time you answered it. Christmas seals are not a seasonal item. They work all year round in the fight against emphysema, tuberculosis, and air pollution. So dig, get the Christmas seals out, put them on your letterheads so we can work to help fight emphysema, tuberculosis, and air pollution. It's a matter of life and breath.
Welcome back to The Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. He is Derek Gary and I'm Lisa Nichols. We're here with you every Wednesday night from 7 to 9. And as always, we want you to be a part of the show. The way that you do that, you dial 855-915-9636. Again, that's 855-915-WMFO. And as always, it's time during the middle of the show. We do Did You Hear? The segment where Derek and I quiz each other on everything from this week's news that we found important. Give one or two words or maybe a little sentence, and we get to tell what the story's about.
You already took one of mine, by the way.
Was it the Cuisinart?
Yeah, I was going to do the Cuisinart thing. So, you already stole one of my topics. I hate it when you do that.
I'm going to start. Yeah. Amherst College.
Amherst College. Amherst College.
Big story on Monday.
Flag?
What if I said Amherst College cross country team?
Amherst College cross country team. It's another one of these sexual improper making lists about the girls and comparing them.
Not good.
It is similar to the Harvard story. I forget the exact details on which ones were involved, but I did catch
yet another chain of sexist emails from college sports teams that ended up being like, this time it was a cross-country team from Amherst. So on Sunday, Amherst student magazine, The Indication, published an article featuring excerpts from multiple email chains written by members of the cross-country team. Emails contained racist, generally lewd comments about women, everything from... An email included a list of photos of the women on campus coupled with details of their sexual history, including, quote, a walking STD, a stuck-up snobby aka the perfect formal date for the desperate members of our team. Hours later, the school did issue a statement that they would be investigating the emails. Currently, no cross-country activities or... competitions.
Remember when there was